Andy Vine didn't look at all like his brother when he came in and had a lemon drink by the pool, so she was glad she'd telephoned Hawaii about him. About her own age, or younger, slight, red-haired, somewhat academic and assuming that she knew much more about college life than she did. "Oh, forgive me, I keep making the wrong assumptions," he said, when she said she knew nothing of any faculty or alumni association in either Ireland or Connecticut. "I thought that's how you and Marilyn met."
"Oh, no, not at all. Other people thought we met over an obsession about gardens in which I have no interest at all."
She was all smiles and wearing her best summer outfit, a blue and white dress that she'd got for a wedding last summer and had never worn since. It had looked great with a hat from Polly Callahan, but there was never anywhere smart enough to wear it since. She should have dressed better. Would everything have been all right had she been an elegant wife?
"Do you know Thai food at all?"
he was asking. "Well, there are Thai restaurants in Ireland now. We're very international. But I've only been twice, so I don't remember it all, and I'd love you to choose for me when we get there." This seemed to go down well. Maybe it was easier making fellas interested in you when you were old and way past it, and it didn't matter anymore. They talked easily in the Thai restaurant. He told her about the kind of publishing his company was involved in, books that you'd never hear of unless you happened to be in that field, and then you not only heard about them, you bought them because you had to. He explained how it had all changed so radically because of technology and CD-ROMs. His grandfather had been a door-to-door salesman for encyclopedias. The man would spin in his grave if he saw the size of an encyclopedia now and knew how they were sold. Andy lived in L.A. in an apartment. He had been married and was now divorced. There were no children. "Did you leave her, or did she leave you?" Rhea asked.
"It's never as simple as that," he smiled.
"Oh, it is," she insisted.
"Okay. I had an affair. She found out. She threw me out."
Rhea nodded. "So you left, really, by ending the marriage?"
"Or so you say, so she said. I didn't want it to end, but who listened to me?"
"Would you have forgiven her if she were the one who had the affair?"
"Sure I would."
"You'd have gone on as if nothing had happened?"
"Look, Maria, people let each other down all the time, don't they? It's not a perfect life with everyone delivering on every promise. Marriages survive affairs if there's something there in the marriage itself that's bigger than the affair. I thought there was in our case. I was wrong."
"If you had your time all over again," she was keen to know.
"You can't rewrite history. I've no idea what I'd do. Tell me, are you divorced also?"
"I think so," Rhea said. He looked at her, startled. That's not really as mad as it sounds. You see, divorce was only recently introduced in Ireland. We're still not entirely used to it. But the answer is yes, I'm about to be."
"Did you leave him, or—"
"Oh, he left me."
"And you won't forgive him?"
"I'm not being given the chance." There was a pause. "Andy, can I ask you about Dale?"
"What do you want to know, exactly?"
"It's just that when I talked to Greg, well, I think I may have somehow said the wrong thing. He seemed a bit startled, upset almost."
"What on earth did you say?"
"Oh, I don't know. Ordinary things, you know. Good wishes and so on."
Andy shook his head. "Well, of course, people are not all the same the way they respond. Everyone takes things differently. Marilyn's never really accepted it. That's the way she copes."
"Can't she and Greg talk about it?"
"Well, Greg wants to, but she won't, apparently."
Rhea felt stung by the way men shrugged things off. Dale was in Hawaii. His mother clearly missed him, and yet things were stuck in this impasse. She and Danny hadn't made a brilliant job of sorting their children out, but they had tried, both of them. She gave Danny that much. This matter of Dale was very baffling. Well, surely all Greg has to do is work it out with her, dates, times of visits.
He was trying to, and then she disappeared to Ireland.
But when does she think he'll come back?
In the fall.
Well, that's a long time, and she still leaves that room like that, Rhea was puzzled.
What did she tell you about it all? Andy asked.
Nothing at all. She never mentioned she had a son at all. Andy looked upset, and a little silence fell between them. And then they didn't speak about the matter again.
There were plenty of other things to talk about. He told her about his childhood in Pennsylvania, and she told him about her mother's obsession with the movies. He explained the passion for baseball, and she told him about hurling and the big final every year in Croke Park. He told her how to make a great Caesar salad, and she explained about potato cakes. She enjoyed the evening, and knew he had too. He drove her back to Tudor Drive, and they sat awkwardly for a few moments in the car. She didn't like to invite him in case it would be misunderstood. Then they both spoke at once. "If ever business takes you to Ireland," Rhea began.
"The conference ends on Wednesday at lunchtime," Andy said.
"Oh, please go on," she said. So he finished what he was going to say.
"And I was wondering if I drove back this way and made you a Caesar salad, would you cook those potato cakes?"
"It's a deal," Rhea said with a big smile and got out of the car. Years ago, when they went out with fellas, the big question always asked was, "Are you seeing him again?" And now she was back in that situation. A fellow had asked to see her again, with all that implied. Rhea stood in her bedroom and looked out on the beautiful garden that this strange woman had created. From what she'd heard, Marilyn Vine spent every waking moment with her hands in the earth, pulling and changing and turning the soil and coaxing the flowers and climbers to come up out of the ground. She felt very out of place here. The friendship that she'd thought she might have with Carlotta and Heidi hadn't bloomed. Both women seemed embarrassed at the effusion of the first night and had made no attempt to arrange another jolly threesome. Despite the admiration in Andy Vine's eyes, she felt no real sense of being pleased and flattered. He was just a strange man from a different world to hers. True, Westville was peaceful and beautiful, a place of trees and a river and a gracious, easy-going lifestyle with superficial courtesy and warmth everywhere, but it wasn't home. And at home, her children had gone out to Cullum's restaurant for a hilarious evening with their new family. And Marilyn Vine had been across the room at a table with Rosemary. And I was here alone. Tears came down her face. She must have been mad to think this was a good idea. Totally mad. It was dawn in Tara Road. Marilyn hadn't slept well. What an ugly scene that had been at the restaurant. Everything had suddenly slipped out of control. All these people were like characters playing their parts in a drama. And not a very pleasant drama. Rosemary and Gertie had filled her in on some of the background. Stories of Rhea's broken marriage, the new relationship, the puzzlement of the children, the known unreliability of that offensive drunken singer, the possible criminal connection of the heavy man who had eventually taken her away. These people knew everything about everyone and weren't slow in discussing it. There was no dignity, reserve, self-preservation. Rosemary had talked about it being natural that people might assume she was gay since she was single and had a sister who was already out with a partner who was a lawyer. Gertie had told her about her husband's problems coping with drink and violence. She spoke as if Jack had been prone to getting chest colds in the winter. Cullum had approached their table with a casual apology over the incident, as if it hadn't been the most excruciatingly embarrassing moment of her life. The two women had told her how they initially thought Rhea was mad to go to America and leave her children, but they hoped it would all work out for the best. Marilyn couldn't take in the degree of involvement and indeed interference that these people felt confident to have in everyone else's life. They thought nothing of discussing the motives and private sorrows of their friend with Marilyn, who was, after all, a complete stranger, here purely because of an accidental home exchange. While she felt sympathy for Rhea and all that had happened to her, she also felt a sense of annoyance. Why hadn't she kept her dignity and refused to allow all these people into her life? The only way to cope with tragedy and grief was to refuse to permit it to be articulated and acknowledged. Deny its existence, you had some hope of survival. Marilyn got out of bed and looked down on the messy garden and the other large red brick houses of the neighborhood. She felt very lost and alone in this place, where garrulous people wanted to know everything about you and expected you to need the details of their lives, too. She ached for the cool house and beautiful garden in Westville. If she were there now, she could go and swim lengths of her pool, safe in the knowledge that no one would call and burden her with post-mortems about last night. Clement the cat, who slept on her bed every night, woke up and stretched and came over to her hopefully. He was purring loudly. The day was about to begin. He was expecting a game and a bowl of something. Marilyn looked at him sadly.
I don't usually talk to animals, Clement, but I'm making an exception in your case. I made the wrong decision coming here. It was the worst decision I ever made in my life.
Chapter 6.
Do you think when we're talking to Granny we should call her Nora?
Brian asked.
What?
Annie looked up from her book.
You know, if we call Bernadette's mother by her first name, maybe we should do the same with Granny.
Brian wanted to be fair.
No, Brian, shut up, said Annie.
You always say shut up. You never say anything nice, not ever at all.
Who could say anything nice to you, Brian, honestly?
Well, some people do.
Who, apart from Mam and Dad? They have to, because you're what they got.
Then Ola often says nice things.
Tell me one nice thing she said to you today. Go on, tell me.
She said it was good that I'd remember to let my knights come on the centre of the board.
And had you?
Annie still refused chess lessons, and she couldn't accept that Brian had mastered it.
Well, only by accident in a way. I just sort of put them out there and they were commanding. She was very pleased with me.
Brian smiled at the triumph of it all. Sometimes he was more pathetic than awful, Annie thought. You'd feel sorry for him. And he didn't really understand that their lives were going to change. He thought that after the summer everyone would go back to their own homes. He'd even asked Bernadette's mother if they could go on playing chess in the autumn when they came back from America. Their games wouldn't have to end then, would they? Finola had said that they could surely continue to play whenever he came to visit his dad and she happened to be around. Stupid Brian had just looked bewildered. In his heart he thought that Dad might be coming home. He hadn't taken on board that this was the way things were always going to be. Kitty had said that Bernadette must be very, very clever to have got her claws into Annie's father. Despite the ban, Annie still managed to see Kitty by dint of visiting the library. Since Annie read a lot now from sheer lack of anything else to do, as she kept telling them, it was considered legitimate that she visit the library. Kitty would come along too and report on the real world of motorbike rallies, of discos and of great crowds who hung out in bars. Annie listened wistfully to the freedom of it all. But Kitty was more interested in the sexual side of it all and was fascinated by Bernadette.
She looks so dumb and half asleep, you'd never have thought it. She must be like one of those sirens, one of those famous courtesans who had captured people by wiles. There were women who could make men their sexual slaves. It'd be interesting to know exactly how.
She's hardly likely to tell me, Annie said dryly.
You all get on so well, Kitty said, amazed. I thought you'd hate her taking your mother's place and everything. No, she hasn't taken Mam's place. She's just made a new place. It's hard to explain. She lets you do what you want. That's good anyway. No, I said she doesn't bother us. That's a different thing. She doesn't make any rules except about you. She's obviously got a heavy message from Dad that you're a no-go area, Annie grinned. Kitty was puzzled. I always thought he liked me. I even thought he fancied me a bit, that I was in there with a chance. Your mother was on to me, that's why she didn't want me round the place. Annie was shocked. Kitty, you wouldn't have. Oh, I wouldn't have wanted to be your stepmother. I thought a bit of clubbing, going to fancy places. Kitty wiggled her hips. A bit of, you know, he's a good-looking man, your dad.
Annie looked at her with a sick feeling. Kitty had had sex with fellas, and she said it was usually great. Sometimes it was boring, but mainly it was great. Annie shouldn't knock it until she tried it. But Annie knew she was never going to try it. It was frightening and urgent and out of control and horrible, like what she'd seen in the lane that day. And like Orla King, the woman who sang and made all the trouble in Cullum's, she'd been singing and talking about sex. It was a horrible, upsetting, confusing business. She remembered her mother explaining it all to her years back and saying it was very good because it made you feel especially close and warm when you loved someone.
Oh, some good it had done poor Mam feeling close and warm. And it wasn't as if, at her age, she was ever going to feel close and warm to anyone again like Dad had done, so easily. Rhea decided to have her hair done for her date with Andy on Wednesday night. But she wouldn't go to Carlotta's. She wouldn't let these women think she was clingy and dependent, even if it were true. There were other beauty salons in Westville or nearby. In fact, she remembered seeing one in a shopping mall that she'd driven to not long ago. She would go and investigate. Expertly, she backed Marilyn Vine's car out of the carport and by chance met Carlotta, who was collecting her mail. The greeting was warm. "Hi! Now, isn't this a bit of luck? I was hoping to see you." "Here I am," Rhea said with a smile fixed to her face. What did the woman mean, she was hoping to see her? She lived next door, for heaven's sake.
"Yeah, well, I didn't want to keep coming on top of you. I know Marilyn values her privacy."
"Marilyn is Marilyn," Rhea said tartly. "I'm Rhea." She felt it was a childish, petulant outburst, something Brian would have said a few years ago. She must be getting unhinged. If Carlotta was startled, she managed to hide it.
"Sure, well, what I was going to say was that Tuesday evening we have a hair product company coming to the salon, you know. They want us to buy their line, so as an encouragement, they offer 4 or 5 of our regular customers a special. Shampoo, treatment, conditioner, the works. Then if we all like what we see, we buy into their range. It happens with various companies a couple of times a year. I wondered, would you like to take part? It's not being a guinea pig or anything. They won't turn your hair purple."
Rhea was astounded. "But you must have more regular clients."
"Do come," Carlotta pleaded.
"Well, of course. What time?" It was all arranged. Rhea wished she could feel more pleased. Carlotta was obviously not being cold and distant, as she had thought, and it would be good to meet some neighbours. But her heart wasn't in it. Her feelings from Saturday night were still with her. This was a strange place, not her home. It was foolish to build up hopes that she would fit in and get to know everyone. She'd been meaning to ring Marilyn in Ireland, but couldn't think of anything to say. Still, she shrugged to herself, it was something. And, as Hillary would say, it was a free hairdo.
Marilyn braced herself for endless discussions about the scenes in the restaurant when Gertie next arrived. But the woman looked frail and anxious and wasn't at all eager to speak. Possibly Jack hadn't appreciated the girl's night out and had showed it in the way he knew best. Gertie, for once, seemed relieved to be left alone to iron and kneel down and polish the legs of the beautiful table in the front room. Marilyn worked on in the front garden. She always left Gertie's money in an envelope on the hall table with a card saying thank you. Colm worked in the back garden. There was no communication there either. Rosemary had driven by but hadn't felt it necessary to call. Rhea's mother and the insane dog hadn't been in for 2 days. Marilyn felt her shoulders getting tense. Perhaps she'd managed to persuade them that she didn't want to be part of some big holiday camp with them all. As Gertie was leaving, she paused and congratulated Marilyn on the work she'd done.
"You have a fierce amount of energy, Marilyn," she said.
"Thank you. I hope it gets better for you, whatever it is that's wrong," Gertie said, and then she was gone.
Marilyn flushed a dark red. How dare these people assume there was something wrong? She had confided nothing to them, answered their very intrusive questions vaguely and distantly. They'd no right to presume there was anything wrong. She'd been tempted to tell Rhea during that very first conversation the extent of her grief, but now she was glad she hadn't. If she'd told Rhea Lynch, nerve centre of all the information and concern of the city it appeared, then it would probably have been published in the newspapers by now. Marilyn had intended to call Rhea in Westville, but held off. There was nothing to say. The phone rang in the sunny kitchen where Rhea was busy making her scrapbook of things to do for when the children arrived.
"Hi, Rhea. It's Heidi. I've found a course for beginners on the internet. Shall we sign on?"
"Oh, I'm sorry to be so wet, Heidi. I don't know if I'd understand it. I might be left behind."
"But it's for people like us who aren't computer literate. It's not for bright kids. All we need is basic keyboard skills. You've got those."
"If I can remember them."
"Of course you can.
And it's only 5 lessons. Is it very expensive, Heidi? Oh, I hate sounding like my clinically mean sister and brother-in-law, but I do have to hold on to my dollars for when the kids come out. No, it's not expensive at all. But anyway, it's my treat. We get a reduction through the faculty office. And anyway, I want someone to go with. I can't. Wednesday and Friday this week, then 3 days the following week, and hey, we're on the World Wide Web. Oh, I'm not sure about this Wednesday, Rhea began. Come on, Rhea. You're not doing anything else, are you? No, no, it's not that. It's just, I'd love you to come. It's only for an hour. They think rightly that we can't concentrate any longer. It's 12 to 1. Oh, it's in the daytime, Rhea said with relief. Then of course I'll come, Heidi. You tell me where to go. Greg telephoned Marilyn from Hawaii.
Thank you for your letter, he said.
It was still very stilted. I tried to say more, she said.
Still, we're talking, writing, that's good, better anyway.
She didn't want him to begin defining things too much. And are you all right, Greg?
I'm okay. Summer courses, kids who know nothing, then graduate. Then there are graduate students, far too many bright kids who will never get appointments. What else is new in university?
He sounded relaxed. This was as near as they had been to a real conversation for a long time. I wish they had email here, Marilyn said.
You could have taken your laptop, I suppose, he said.
I know. I didn't think of it at the time.
I spoke to Rhea Lynch, by the way. She called me here. She sounded very pleasant.
Nothing wrong?
No, just to check if Andy was who he said he was. He was passing through Westville, wanted to contact you.
Well, that was good of Andy. And did Rhea meet him?
No, no, she just called him at the motel.
I hope she's getting on okay. I don't want to call her there too often. It sounds as if I'm checking up on her, Marilyn said.
I know what you mean, Greg said. Then what sort of feeling do you get about her from being in her home?
Well, what do you mean, feeling?
Does she sound a bit odd or anything?
Why do you ask that? Marilyn's voice was cold now. I thought you said you had a conversation with her yourself.
Oh, sure, I just got the impression she might be very religious, spiritual or something.
I never got that, Marilyn said, puzzled. In Ireland, of course, the place is coming down with churches and bells ringing and statues, but I didn't think she was into all that.
No, well, maybe I got it wrong. It's just something she said.
What exactly?
Well, no, nothing important, I guess. As I said, I got it wrong. What's the place you're staying in like?
It's a beautiful house. Everything's so old here. People are different. They keep dropping by, but they don't stay long. Oh, and there's a cat. Clement. An enormous ginger cat.
Oh, that sounds good. Have you things to do?
Yes, I garden a lot, and I walk, and it's all okay, Greg.
Glad you're happy, he said.
Yes, well.
But you're all right, anyway.
He sounded anxious. Sure, Greg. I'm all right, she said. Marilyn went back into the garden and dug with renewed vigor. She wouldn't ask Greg why Rhea had sounded odd. It didn't matter. Nothing mattered except that she put in her time here and got on to whatever happened next. A shadow fell over her, and there was Cullum standing beside her. She put up a hand to keep the sun out of her eyes.
Hello, he said.
Hi, Marilyn said.
I'm not a great believer in words as apologies, so I brought you some flowers instead.
It wasn't your fault.
It was my place where it all happened. Anyway, it's over. Please, almighty God, may it be over. In all my anxiety dreams about running a restaurant, and they were pretty vivid, let me tell you, I never thought up that particular scenario.
In spite of herself, Marilyn found that she was smiling. As you say, it's over. Thanks for the flowers. I also need your advice about where to get soil and fertilizer when I've cleared that undergrowth.
I take you.
Cullum looked amazed at her achievement. She'd done the work of 3 men uprooting and cutting back. Soon the earth would be ready to function.
Daddy Lynch must be very grateful to you.
What on earth for? She was genuinely surprised.
For improving the value of his property. That sort of thing is a big priority in his life.
You don't like him very much.
I don't like what he did to Rhea and how he did it, that's true, but I don't know now whether I liked him before or not. I think I probably did.
Colm tried to remember. I'm not doing it for him. I'm doing it for Rhea and the house, Marilyn said.
Well, same thing. They'll have to sell it eventually.
Never. Marilyn was shocked.
Well, how can he keep two families and keep this place going? But enough about Danny Lynch and all the trouble he causes everywhere he goes.
Was he the problem with the little blonde Shantuzzi, as my dad used to call them?
Shantuzzi. That's a marvellous word. Yes, he was one of her problems. Another was a carnation vase filled with vodka.
She looked at him open-mouthed.
Come to Ireland, Marilyn, and see it all. Nature red in tooth and claw. Will you come out to dinner tonight? I want to check out some of the opposition. I love your company.
Well, thank you so much, said Marilyn Vine. She wouldn't mention it, however, when Gertie next came in to clean the house and iron her clothes. Nor did she refer to it in the thank you note she wrote and left at Rosemary's elegant house. No need to overburden people with information.
I was wondering, would you like me to call you Nora, Granny?
Have you gone off your head, Brian? His grandmother answered.
Told you, but you wouldn't listen, Annie said triumphantly.
What's all this about?
Nora Johnson looked from one to the other suspiciously. It's one more sign that he should be in a straitjacket, said Annie.
Well, I know you're pretty old, Granny, but you're not that old, are you? And I thought it'd be more friendly, make us all the same somehow.
Annie raised her eyes to heaven. And will you call Dad Danny when we go down to the boat tonight? And will you have a few more upsetting things to say to your friend Rhea when she rings up from America next? Nora Johnson looked at her grandson. His face was troubled.
Do you know what, Brian? I'd actually like to be called Nora. On reflection, I would. That's what they call me in St. Rita's.
But they're 110 in St. Rita's, cried Annie in a rage. Of course they call you Nora.
And of course Pliers calls me Nora, said her grandmother.
Annie looked at her in horror. The dog calls you Nora, Granny.
In his heart he does. He doesn't think of me as a Mrs. Johnson figure. Yes, Brian, I'm Nora to you from now on.
Thanks, Granny. I knew it was for the best,
Brian said happily. The entire family was going mad, Annie decided. And now they had to go to Tara Road and say hello to Mrs. Vine before they left for the boat on the Shannon. Mam wanted it. It would be friendly, she said, and courteous. Mam lived in a different world when all was said and done. Mrs. Vine had a plate of horrible ginger snap biscuits that'd break your teeth, and she had made some ham sandwiches. Nothing, thank you, Annie said firmly.
But please do, I got them ready for you.
Very sorry, Mrs. Vine, I don't eat dead animals, and I find the biscuits a bit hard, so is it all right if I just drink the tea?
Oh, of course, let me see. I have some frozen cheesecake. I could defrost that for you. It won't take long.
I eat ham sandwiches, Brian said. I'll eat them all so that they won't go to waste. I mean, apart from the ones you'll be eating yourself.
He reached out for the plate.
We could divide them up.
Annie didn't have to say, Brian. Her face said it fairly loudly.
Or indeed, leave them where they are and eat them as the urge comes on us, he said apologetically.
Marilyn felt that she couldn't have made a worse start.
I hope you'll both enjoy your visit to Westville, she began.
Do they have proper biscuits there? Brian wondered.
Yes, quite a range, Marilyn assured him. He nodded, pleased.
I'm sure it'll be great. Mam says she loves it. We were talking to her on Saturday night. Annie was trying hard to be polite and to make up for rejecting both kinds of hospitality. I think she's getting to know the place. She was going out to dinner in a Thai restaurant.
This was puzzling. Who could have invited Rhea to that new place that had opened a couple of months back? Or would she have gone on her own?
Does your mother like different food tastes?
She's always cooking, certainly. Brian looked around the kitchen of Tara Road, empty of its normal wire trays filled with scones, breads and cakes.
"You don't do much cooking yourself, Mrs. Vine," he said, slightly censoriously. "Daddy's friend Bernadette doesn't either. Her mother Fanola does, but only when she's in her own place. Though I think she's going to cook on the boat. Do you think she is, Annie?"
"I hadn't given it much thought," Annie said through gritted teeth, "and I'm not sure Mrs. Vine wants to hear all about it either." "I wonder if I could ask you both to call me Marilyn," she asked them suddenly. The much-repeated address of Mrs. Vine was beginning to grate on her nerves. The girl resented her somehow for being in their mother's house. Or maybe she resented her mother for having gone away. Brian accepted that eagerly.
"Yeah, I think it's much better if you ask me," he said.
"Is that you digging up the garden, or is it Cullum? We saw an awful lot of stuff out there."
"Well, it's mainly me. I just love it. But Cullum is going to help me get new soil and plant things where they can reach the light. Maybe you'd like to choose some plants," she asked without much hope. The telephone rang just then. They heard the sound of their mother's voice on the machine. "Hi, Marilyn, it's Rhea. I was just calling to say..."
"It's Mom!"
said Brian, running for the phone. "Brian, wait!" Annie called.
"No, please," Marilyn insisted.
"Mom! Mom! It's Brian! We're here! How did you know?"
Marilyn and Annie's eyes met. Somehow, in that moment, Marilyn felt the hostility beginning to depart. It was as if they were both adults, looking at the baby Brian, who thought his mother had tracked him down.
"Yeah, she's fine. She's chopped down most of the garden."
Annie sighed. "You get to expect a lot of that sort of thing with Brian," she explained to Marilyn. "He always manages to say the one thing that you don't want him to say. I'll sort it out." And to give her great credit, she did sort it out. "Hi, Mom. It's Annie. Yeah, we're here having tea. Yes, very nice indeed. I read a lot. Oh, it's all so boring in Dad's place. I've had to become a compulsive reader. Catch 22 and the Thornbirds." "Yeah, oh, she did ask us to call her Marilyn. No, it's not Brian being mad this time, but don't mind him about the garden. It's only a few weeds, and Cullum's helping her, so stop panicking. We're off tonight. We'll ring you on Saturday."
When Marilyn finally did get on the telephone, Rhea was very apologetic. "I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to make it a family conference. It was just good timing, and it's all going well?" "Oh, yes, brilliantly. And with you?" "Couldn't be better."
"You were at Cullum's restaurant, I hear."
"Yes, the resident pianist drank a vase of vodka. And they tell me you went to the new Thai restaurant in Westville. You liked it?"
"Oh, yes, terrific. Lovely green shrimp curry." Rhea didn't say that she'd been there with Marilyn's brother-in-law. "Look, it's silly us talking now. Why don't you call me back later tonight, using my phone?"
I'm going out tonight."
"Oh, good. Where are you off to?"
"I arranged to go out to the cinema. There's a movie I really want to see," lied Marilyn, who didn't want to say she was going out to dinner with Cullum Barry. They agreed to talk later in the week.
"Is Bernadette up to high dough, packing and everything for the holiday?" Barney asked.
"No, not at all."
Danny was constantly surprised at how gently she moved through life. There would be no lists, no plans, checking through things, emptying fridges, cancelling people, phone calls. 20 minutes before they left, she'd put a few items in a bag. He'd pack his own case. The children had lists of what they should take taped to their cases by Rhea.
"No, she's amazing, Barney. I don't know where she gets her serenity. It's infectious, too, seriously. It's catching. Sometimes when I get fussed, I only have to be with her for 10 minutes, and it's all right again."
"What do you get fussed about, Danny?"
"Oh, lots of things. Money, work, a mad woman living in my house, cutting down my front garden. Rhea being so unaccepting of everything that's happened."
"Hey, is it that bad?" Barney asked.
"I don't usually give a long list of moans, but you did ask, and today's not a good day. There's a long drive ahead. Then a cramped cruiser for 7 days that I can ill afford to be out of the office. Bernadette's mother thinking I'm made of money. The kids seem to be on top of us the whole time." And there was a bit of trouble with Orla King on Saturday night. God, you know everything, Barney. How did you hear that? Oh, friend of Polly's was with Monto's party. He said the owner came over to them with barked instructions that Orla be got out before she got to your table. It wasn't quite in time. Oh, no, but nearly. You'd want to watch it, Danny. Oh, tell me about it. I'm watching it so feverishly I'd need a dozen eyes.
The river was full of families getting onto their Shannon cruisers. Bernadette's mother had arranged a box of groceries from a local store. I telephoned ahead to order them, she explained to Danny.
Great, Finola, he seemed relieved.
It had been a long car journey. In the beginning, as they left the Dublin late afternoon traffic, he was tense. His shoulders were cramped, he had a dozen worries, and his conversation with Barney hadn't helped. Twice he'd made foolish mistakes pulling out of the traffic without checking. Tactfully, Finola had offered to drive, and eventually he accepted. Bernadette sat in the front and played them tapes, which she'd assembled specially for the holiday. It was a restful choice. Gentle Irish music, harpists or Uilleann pipes, non-strident Greek bouzouki, nocturnes by Chopin, deep, soulful French songs that none of them understood, panpipes, violin music that no one recognised. Danny sat in the back of his own car between his daughter and son and slept fitfully as Finola Dunn drove them to the Midlands. He dreamed that Rhea was waiting for them on the boat. "Aren't you going to go home?" she asked Bernadette in the dream. And Bernadette had just shrugged and said, "If you like." Danny had wanted to run after her, but his feet were rooted to the ground. The dream was still very real to him as they got out of the car and began to settle into their boat.
"So will you then?"
Finola said to him.
"Will I what?"
Danny was genuinely puzzled. "Will you pay this man for the groceries?"
"What? Yes, of course."
He took out his credit card. The man shook his head, so he took out a checkbook. He saw the last check stub. It was a payment for their mortgage to the building society. The grocery bill was enormous. The cost of the cruiser was on his credit card. He didn't even want to think about it. But he knew he would have to think about it one day soon. Cullum took Marilyn to Quentin's. He said he wanted to show off Dublin's finest. Also, he knew the Brennans who ran the place.
"Very full for a Monday. That's the booming economy for you," he said approvingly, looking around the many tables that were occupied.
"Nonsense, Cullum. You should explain to Mrs. Vine that they come because the food is so brilliant," said Brenda Brennan.
"This I can believe," Marilyn murmured politely. "I see you've got Marnie McCarthy in with a crowd," Cullum observed.
A shadow crossed Brenda's face.
"Yes, indeed we have," she said.
Cullum raised his eyebrows as if to ask what was the problem.
"I'll let you study the menu," Brenda Brennan said and moved away.
"Does she not like those people?" Marilyn had picked up a vibe.
"No, it's not that. I think she may have had the same problem as I've had."
"Which is?"
"A very big check returned from the bank."
"Really?" Marilyn put on her glasses and studied the party by the window.
"Well, they look very substantial people, not the kind that advance a check." "No, they never did before, and the problem is they're important. They know everyone. You wouldn't want to insult them. And, also, to be fair, they've brought in big business in the past, so it's all a bit tricky."
He looked over at the large man who was being expansive as a host to nine other people. A smart, much younger woman was laughing.
"Is that his wife?" "No, that's Polly. His wife's at home, in a mansion."
"Will you sue him?"
"No. I'll be full next time he books. I'll just kiss one big bill goodbye. No point in going to court over one dinner."
Marilyn looked at him admiringly.
"You're so right. In the States, we are much too litigation conscious. You're sensible to think of it as one big dinner and not to worry too much about it."
"But I do worry about it. Barney McCarthy more or less owns Danny Lynch. If he goes down, so will Danny. And what will happen to Rhea then?"
Rosemary was legendary for the speed of her weekly business meetings. They were held early in the morning, a large dish of fresh fruit, a lot of strong coffee, and a rapid agenda. accountant, office manager, marketing manager, and her own personal assistant, all trained to present speedily their reports and follow-ups. They went rapidly through accounts, new business, overtime, and what the rivals are up to. Then it came to problems.
A really big check returned from the bank, I'm afraid, the accountant said.
How much? Who?
11,000. Barney McCarthy.
That's an error. That's a bank oversight, Rosemary said, about to go on to the next item.
I see Polly's dress hire is for sale in this morning's paper.
The accountant was laconic. Thanks. Then it's not an oversight.
I'll call the bank. They won't tell you anything.
They'll tell me, said Rosemary. When the meeting was over, she dialed Danny Lynch's mobile phone. It wasn't picking up. You're not doing this to me, Danny, you little bastard. You've done enough to everyone, and I can tell you straight out, you're not doing this to me. Not after all we've been through. But she was speaking to herself, not to Danny, since he was on the Shannon without a care in the world. Hilary said she was going to invite Marilyn to come for a swim out in the 40-foot. They could go out on the dart.
That's an unusual idea, her mother said.
Martin suggested it. He said it had saved the cost of buying her a meal.
True,
said Nora Johnson, and still be entertaining her.
It would.
Nora Johnson sighed a deep sigh. How had she raised a daughter who thought only in terms of saving money? Hilary hadn't been like that as a child. Surely she hadn't. They never had much when she worked in the dry cleaners, and the mother and two daughters had all been slightly wistful about what they'd buy had they the money, but it hadn't been obsessive. Martin had changed her, dragged her down. Still, at least he hadn't abandoned her for a teenage waif. Nora sighed again. Sometimes she felt it was all very hard. Hilary looked at her in concern. She didn't like all this sighing.
Ma'am, don't you think it's about time you moved into Rhea's house?
What?
Well, not when Marilyn's there, of course, but as soon as she goes.
Well, what would I do that for?
To have company for you and to pay Rhea some rent.
I don't need company.
Of course you do, ma'am. But whether you do or not, Rhea will definitely need someone to pay her something when Danny's grand plans are all sorted out.
You can't be serious.
I am. Get in there, ma'am, before she asks someone else.
Hilary, have you a brain in your head? Poor Rhea will be out of that house by Christmas.
What?
Barney McCarthy's on his uppers. I saw in today's paper that Polly Callahan's business is for sale. If he's selling the Floozy's dress hire outfit, he must be down to looking in Kitty's money boxes. And when he goes for the high jump, then so will Danny boy. Your brother-in-law will have one of his boards up outside that house before Rhea gets back.
They all took turns at steering the boat. It was simple while you were still in the river. But when it broadened into a lake, there were real rules. You had to keep the black boys on one side and the red on the other. They waved to Germans and Dutch people they'd met already, more expert at mooring and casting off than they were. They bought ice creams when they drew in and tied up at the small villages or went to pubs where they played darts.
"Wouldn't Mam love this?"
said Brian, as a flight of birds came out of the reeds and soared above them. The silence was worse than any number of people telling him to shut up.
"Sorry,"
he said. Bernadette spoke dreamily.
"Brian, of course you must mention your mother. She's not dead or anything. And maybe one day you'll take her on a trip like this."
Annie and Brian saw Danny reach out and stroke Bernadette's face in gratitude. He sort of traced it with his fingers and pushed her hair back. There was such love and tenderness in the gesture, it was almost embarrassing to watch. The boy Hubie, who taught the course Don't Fear the Internet, looked about 16. In fact, he wasn't much older. This was his first venture into business, he said, and he wanted to make sure all the customers were satisfied, so if there were any areas they didn't understand, then he wasn't doing his job right. Rhea found to her surprise that she seemed to understand it. It wasn't a world that only people like Rosemary understood. It was quite ordinary, a way of getting in touch.
She saw how easy it would be to get sucked in and to spend all day browsing, looking up amazing facts and talking to strangers on the screen. She had lunch with Heidi afterwards, and they went over what they'd learned and what they should practice before meeting Hubie again on Friday. He'd asked them to send him messages which he would answer. It was easy for Heidi. She'd all the computers and word processors in the alumni office. But where would Rhea go?
Marilyn has a laptop that she didn't take away with her. You could use that.
Oh, I'd be afraid I might break it.
No, of course not. Tell her on the phone you want to use it, and I'll set it up for you. Do you think it wouldn't be intrusive? No, it's only machinery, but Rhea, I don't think you should mention that Hubie is our teacher.
Why ever not?
Well, he was a friend of Dale's, you see.
Well, what's so bad about that?
You know, oh, I don't know. All I know is that Dale's in Hawaii.
What?
Well, with his father, isn't he?
Heidi was silent.
Heidi, where else is he?
He's not here. He's not in Ireland. His room is there waiting for him.
Dale's dead, Heidi said.
No, he can't be dead. You should see his room. That's not the room of someone dead.
Dale's dead. That's what it's all about. Marilyn won't accept it.
Rhea was more shocked than she'd been for a very long time.
Why didn't she tell me?
She won't speak about it. Not to anyone. Not even to Greg. That's why he's in Hawaii.
He left her?
No. He thought she'd come with him, but apparently not. They'd been there once with Dale.
How old was Dale?
Not quite 16.
Oh, God, thought Rhea, Annie's age.
How did he die?
A motorcycle accident.
But surely he was too young to ride.
Exactly.
Why on earth didn't she tell me?
Rhea shook her head. I was coming to live in her home, after all. She'd know I'd see his room. I even dusted, for heaven's sake.
Heidi was gentle.
She doesn't have the words to tell people.
When did it happen?
March of last year. They turned off the machine in August.
The machine?
Life support machine.
Oh, poor Marilyn. What a decision to have to make.
She thinks they made the wrong one. That's why she has no peace.
Well, if she has no peace, I sure as hell wonder whether she'll find it in Tara Road, said Rhea.
Marilyn lay in her bath and Clement sat on the bathroom chair as if he were somehow guarding her. Gertie had told her that Clement didn't normally go upstairs.
Well, he does now, Marilyn had said.
It's just that when Rhea comes back, he might, you know, being only a cat, still think he's welcome up here.
Gertie had tried to be tactful, but wasn't making a good fist of it.
Well, I'm sure Rhea's doing things in my house that I don't approve of either, but we agreed that we'd put up with that for the summer.
Marilyn sounded brisk and firm. But are there any living things in your house? Gertie wanted to know.
No living things, Marilyn had said.
As Marilyn added more hot water to her bath, Clement yawned a great yawn.
I fought for you, Clement. Don't yawn at me like that, she said.
Clement closed his mouth and went back to sleep.
Marilyn wondered at all the living things that Rhea had left behind her. Andy arrived with a cold bag full of food. He'd also brought a bottle of wine.
You look very nice, he said appreciatively. Very nice indeed.
Thank you. It had been so long since anyone had paid her a compliment.
You look fine, sweetheart, was the most Danny had said to her for ages.
And in the last years, Annie had said little except, you look absolutely terrible in that colour.
Rosemary had said she looked well when she dressed up, but the implication was that it wasn't often enough. Hilary had remarked that fine feathers make fine birds. Her mother had said there was nothing to beat a good navy costume and a white blouse, and it was a pity when people with as much class and opportunity as Rhea wore streelish-looking things you wouldn't see on a halting sight.
True, Cullum sometimes said she looked well, but it was more a compliment to the house or the garden or Rhea as part of the scene than to herself. So it was unusual to be admired openly by a man.
Then the cooking began by rubbing the garlic around the bowl for the Caesar salad. There was a lot of gesture, flourish and fuss, but it tasted very good.
and then they began on the potato cakes.
Oh, they're latkes, Andy said a little disappointed. He thought it was something totally unknown.
Are they?
Rhea was disappointed too. But I actually like them a lot. And these are Irish latkes, so that makes them special, he said.
So they laughed over that and over a lot of things. He told her about the conference and the mad woman organizing it, who was at such a level of stress she was almost ready to ignite. Arranging the seating plan for the conference dinner, a matter of no importance whatsoever, had her on heavy sedation.
How did it go, the dinner, in the end? Rhea asked. No idea. It was tonight.
And you didn't wait for it?
I thought this would be more fun, and I was right, he said.
Rhea had made a strawberry shortcake, which they had with the coffee.
You mean you didn't buy this at the gourmet shop?
No, my own two hands. She laughed and stretched out her newly manicured hands.
But you bought the pastry, surely?
No way. I make pastry quick as looking at you.
Andy was very impressed, and she was enjoying this in a childish way.
She told him about the internet lessons and asked, did he think Marilyn would mind her using the laptop?
Not a bit. I'll set it up for you.
I should ask first.
Look, it's like using someone's telephone or the vacuum. It's not like a finely tuned piano or anything.
But suppose...
Come on, where does she keep it?
It's in the study. They went into the pleasant book-lined room, and Andy opened the machine.
I'll show you how to boot it up, and then you'll be able to do it for yourself.
As he spoke, the telephone rang. And because they weren't in the room with the answering machine, Rhea answered it automatically. Hello? She said, as if she were back in Dublin and this was her phone.
Rhea, it's Greg Vine.
Oh, Greg, how are you? Her eyes met Andy's across the desk. The natural thing, the normal thing, would have been to say, you won't believe it, but your brother's here. That's what people would say if it were an ordinary situation, surely. But then it might need a lot more explanation than was necessary and might imply things which didn't need to be implied. So she said nothing about Andy Vine being 4 feet away from her, with a half smile on his face as he watched her. Rhea listened to Greg's apologetic request that she find a file for him. It was in the study. I'm in the study as we speak, Rhea said.
Ah, good,
he sounded pleased.
Very technical books, I'm afraid. Lots of student papers. That's what I want you to get for me. Can I direct you?
Sure. From Hawaii, Greg Vine directed her to the wall with student notes on it and gave her a year, then a name, then a subject. Each time she repeated them, Andy moved and found the document.
It's just the first page and title of the publications this kid has done. We need it today.
Today?
I was going to ask Heidi and Henry as a huge favor to call round and pick it up and email it to me.
Heidi and Henry to come round here to pick it up and email it to you tonight? She repeated every word as if she were a half-wit, but she wanted Andy to get the other end of the conversation. He understood immediately. He pointed to the piece of paper and to the laptop and to his own chest. I could send it to you by email myself if you let me use Marilyn's laptop.
You know how to email?
He was surprised and pleased. Well, yes, by chance I do. I went to a lesson this morning with Heidi.
Well, well, what amazing luck. I don't need to get Heidi and Henry out at all.
He was overjoyed at the good timing. Andy had written down, get the password and his email address. And in moments the information was put in and the message sent.
Ah, it's on my screen now. I can't thank you enough. Who's giving this course, anyway? You learn pretty quick.
Rhea remembered that Hubie had been a friend of the dead Dale. Some man. I didn't get his name.
Oh, never mind. He saved us all tonight, whoever he was.
When she hung up, they looked at each other. One bridge had been crossed almost accidentally.
Well, now. Since they think in Hawaii that you're an expert at this, let's make you one, he said.
Was he sitting a little too close to her, she wondered. Let me get my notes. She jumped up and went for the sheet of paper that Hubie had given them all at the class. Andy looked at them.
My God, Hubie Green. He was one of the kids with Dale on the night of the accident.
Rhea looked at him levelly. Why didn't you tell me Dale was dead? He was shocked.
But you knew, surely.
No, I didn't. I had to wait until Heidi told me.
But you mentioned his room, the way it was all laid out.
I thought he was in Hawaii. I asked you when he was coming back, you said in the fall.
Oh, my God. I thought you meant Greg.
There was a silence while they each realized how the misunderstanding had happened.
You see, they're so very cut up, they can't even bring themselves to talk about it. To mention that you knew Hughie Green would bring it all back.
I know, said Rhea. That's why I pretended I didn't know his name.
You did it very well,
Andy was admiring. You know a funny thing? At home, I'm always so honest and undevious, and since I came out here, I haven't stopped pretending and covering up things for no reason at all.
Oh, there's always a reason, he smiled.
Pure misguided niceness, I think, she said ruefully.
Okay, so we have to pretend one more thing, which is that you understood this whole getting on the net thing by yourself, and then we can stop pretending, okay?
Okay, she said a little anxiously. He was definitely sitting too close for friendship.
Who do we know with email? He asked.
Hughie. He said we could send messages any time.
Hughie, yeah.
What's wrong? He's a nice kid.
Sure.
Tell me. I know nothing about what happened. Nothing at all. Well, I get the feeling Marilyn's so private. I felt she wouldn't want me to go around asking questions, that she'd tell me what she wanted me to know, and it's not very much.
Do you resent that?
I think she should have told me that her son was dead. I don't want half of Dublin telling her about poor Rhea, poor old Rhea, whose husband took off with a teenager. So, since I get the feeling she's not going to be demanding information from my friends, I shouldn't from hers.
It's just what, Maria?
He had never got the shortened version of her name, and somehow she quite liked him calling her something different. It made whatever there was or might be between them something that was out of time. It's just that there's a mystery here. There's no mystery in my case. It's as old as time. Man marries wife. Man sees newer, younger, fresher model. Man says goodbye to wife. The only mystery is that there's not more of it.
Maria, please, you sound so bitter.
What? Should I be overjoyed about it? At least it's plain to see what happened. Here it's different, quite different. There's like a conspiracy of silence about it all. That room is like a shrine to him, the fact that nobody mentions the accident.
But you see, Andy began.
No, to be honest, I don't see. Do you know what I said to your brother Greg when I was talking to him in Hawaii? I'll tell you what I said. I asked him how Dale was enjoying it out there. My flesh is creeping when I try to think why he thinks I said what I did.
He'll know, Andy soothed her. He'll realize that Marilyn couldn't have told you.
Look, I'm as sorry as hell that it all happened. I went into that room again. I cried over the child that I thought was out surfing in Honolulu. I cried to think he's dead and buried. But still, we should be able to talk about it. Oh, not all the time, as people say we do in Ireland, but just acknowledge it. She left his room like that and didn't tell me. That's not natural, Andy. Even you freeze up at the mention of that kid Hughie's name. Maybe if nobody else tells me what happened, I'll talk to Hughie about it.
Don't do that.
No, of course I wouldn't. But I am pointing out it's odd.
Don't you think we all know that?
What do you mean?
Listen, in this world, there was only one marriage that any of us could think was truly happy, and that was Greg and Marilyn's. And yet, from the night of the accident, they were never able to relate to each other as human beings again.
Did they blame each other or something?
Well, there's no way they could have. Hughie, two other kids, and Dale were all crazy about motorbikes. But they were too young, and they all had parents who would have as soon let heroin into the house as let a motorbike into their backyards. So on Hughie's birthday, the kids went out somewhere. It was meant to be a picnic. I know, because I was here at the time. He got up and started to walk around the study. And they drank some beer, and they found two bikes, and they decided that this was a gift from the gods.
They
found them? Yeah, found, as in stole them outside a restaurant. Hubie and the other kid who died, Johnny, were a little bit on the wild side. Not hugely wild, but the signs were there. Older, too, but not much. But at that age, a few months counts.
I know. Rhea thought suddenly of Kitty, a year older than Annie, but several years ahead of her always.
And they went for what was described at the inquest as a kind of test drive. And they went around a corner, and one of the bikes was hit by a truck. Which wasn't surprising, really, because the bike where Dale was hanging on to Johnny was on the wrong side of the road. Johnny was killed instantly. Dale was on a life support machine for 6 months, and then they agreed to let him go.
They sat in silence at the tragedy that had come to this house.
And Marilyn said that she'd never forgive any of them as long as she lived, and Greg said that they'd have no peace until they learned to forgive.
Rhea had tears in her eyes. And is that what drove them apart?
I imagine so. Greg doesn't say much about it. You know how hopeless we men are for talking about feelings.
Well, you're not too bad. You've told me that story very sympathetically, and it wasn't just idle curiosity on my part, you know.
I know, he said.
Do you understand how I felt sort of protective about her? How I didn't want to ask Carlotta and Heidi and anyone else?
Sure I do. And you understand also why it wouldn't be good to ask Hubie? Well, that kid has had a lot to live with. His birthday, he got them drunk, his friend Johnny driving a stolen bike, and he and another kid walk away alive. I'm kind of impressed with him, that he's setting up something like this to make his college tuition.
I know, and of course you feel bitter about him, Rhea said.
It wasn't his fault. He didn't set out to kill Dale or anything, Andy soothed her.
But it is awkward, isn't it? I'm sorry to have become involved.
Look, it's got nothing to do with you. Come on, Maria, homework time. Let's get our assignments done.
They sent Hubie a message, and he sent back, "Congratulations, Mrs. Lynch, you're a natural." Then they sent one to Heidi. She's going to die when they tell her in the alumni office tomorrow that there's a message for her from me, Rhea pealed with laughter. I wish we knew someone else with an email, she said.
Well, we could send one to my laptop back in the motel, he said.
And you could ring me tonight to say it had arrived, she said.
Or tomorrow, he suggested gently.
It took a moment for it to dawn on her what he was saying.
It's so nice here. So good to hear laughter in this house again, Andy said. And you and I have no ties. Nobody who will be betrayed or hurt. Wouldn't it be nice if we spent the rest of the evening together?
He had a hand under her chin, lifting her face up towards his. She swallowed and tried to speak. He took the opportunity of her not speaking to kiss her, gently but firmly, and he put his arm around her shoulder. She pulled away, startled. Rhea Lynch would be 38 this year. In November, on the anniversary of Clark Gable's death, nobody had kissed her since she was 22, except the man who had tired of her and told her that there was nothing left in what she thought was a fine, happy marriage. I must explain, she began.
Must you?
Yes. I've had a lovely, lovely evening, but you see, I don't...
I know, I know.
He was kissing her ear now, gently nuzzling, in fact, and it was rather nice. Andy, you have to forgive me if I've been giving the wrong signals. I couldn't have had a happier evening. I mean that truly, truly, I do, but I don't want it to go any further. I'm not playing games. I never did ever, even when I was a kid going out with fellas. But I was often misunderstood, and the fault is all mine. If you thought things were different, I'm a bit inexperienced, you see.
I had hopes when you didn't tell my brother that I was here, you see, he explained.
I know, I know. She knew that this was a fair perception.
But I agree. It was a delightful evening. It doesn't have to end in bed. It would be much nicer if it did,
but if it's not going to, let's remember the good bits.
They were all good bits. She smiled at him, grateful that he hadn't turned on her, outraged that he'd been misled.
Those Irish latkes. Eat your heart out, Jewish cookery, he said.
That Caesar salad, emperor of Caesar salads, she said.
And that strawberry shortcake, home-baked pastry already.
And the stylish wine in its cool bag?
Hey, there's lots of good bits, he said. Look in your machine tonight. There may well be a message pending, he said, and left.
She cleared up everything and went into the study to see if there were any emails for her. There were two. One from Hubie.
Just a test, Mrs. Lynch, to see can you retrieve as well as send. Hubie Green.
And then there was one from Andy. Thank you so much for the most enjoyable dinner I have had in years. I will definitely be back at the alumni weekend, as will Greg, but if there's a chance we could meet again before that, I would so much enjoy it. Your new friend, Andy Vine.
Imagine, boring old Rhea Lynch, poor deserted Rhea, dreary mumsy tiresome Rhea, had a new friend called Andy Vine. And, had she not said a persuasive no, then she could have had a lover of the same name as well. She looked at herself in the hall mirror and wondered what it would have been like. She'd never made love with any man except Danny. Danny, who knew her body so well and brought her such pleasure. It would have been awkward getting undressed in front of this man. How did people do it? Be so instantly intimate with people they hardly knew. People like Rosemary. But then Rosemary looked like Rosemary, as near perfect as possible. Rhea was afraid that her own bottom might be a bit saggy and that she'd look floppy when naked. In a way, it was a relief not to have to go through the motions of getting to know another body and fear the possible criticism of her own. Yet it would have been nice to have had arms around her and someone wanting her again. She sighed and went into Dale's room. She turned over the pages of Dale Vine's scrapbook, the pictures of motorbikes, the advertisements, the cuttings about various motorcycle heroes. Marilyn had been strong enough to leave these here, reminders of the machines that had killed her only child, and yet she hadn't been able to tell the woman who was going to live in her house that her son was dead. This was a very complicated person indeed. Marilyn had refused so many invitations that she feared she might now be causing offence. She had better go out with Hilary, Rhea's discontented and unprepossessing sister. The woman had been very insistent. She had called several times to mention a picnic on the coast. It would be good to swim again, and Marilyn told herself she was a match for any of these inquisitive Irish. Just answer vaguely and ask them about themselves, then they were off. All you had to do was sit back and listen. Hilary arrived bristling with energy and fuss. "We'll miss the rush hour on the train, which'll be good," she said. "Oh, good. I'm ready whenever you are." "Merciful God, Rhea'll go mad when she sees all that work in the garden. Are they digging for treasure or what?" "Oh, just a bit of clearing out the undergrowth. It'll be perfect when she comes back. Your sister has a very beautiful house, hasn't she?" Marilyn said. "Well, I'll tell you straight out what I think. I think that Rhea and Danny got their money too easy and these things have a habit of coming home to roost."
How do you mean exactly? Should we have a cup of coffee or would you like to get on the road, the train?"
"We could have a cup of coffee, I suppose. Were you not cooking, baking, like?"
Hilary seemed to look around the kitchen with the same disapproval as Brian had, searching for something which wasn't there.
"Well, no. We're going out, aren't we?"
Marilyn was startled.
"I thought we might have a picnic out there."
"Oh, yes, yes. What a good idea. Will we pass a delicacy shop on the way?"
"A what?"
"You know, somewhere we could buy the picnic."
"But it would cost as much to buy a picnic in one of those places as to have a meal out. I really meant sandwiches."
Marilyn was beginning to regret this bitterly, but it was too late to turn back.
"We could hard-boil two of those eggs and take a couple of tomatoes and two slices of ham, bread and butter, and aren't we fine then?"
Hilary seemed to be restored to good humour. The two of them prepared the very basic picnic and caught a bus to the station and then took the little electric train out to Dunleary. It travelled south along the coast, and Marilyn commented with pleasure on all she saw.
"Martin and I knew you'd enjoy this," Hilary was pleased.
"Tell me how you met Martin," Marilyn asked.
She listened to the strange, downbeat story, told with great pride, of a house saved for and bought, investments made, savings tucked away, economies arranged. They got out of the train and walked along the coast to the place they were going to swim. And as they walked by the shining but very cold-looking sea, Hilary talked about property prices, about Martin's brothers getting the small farm in the West, about children of 14 getting pregnant in the school where Martin taught and where she worked in the office. When they got to the swimming place, Marilyn cried out in delight, "Look at the Martello Tower and the Joyce Museum! I know where we are. This is where Ulysses opened. It's the very spot." "Yeah, that's right." Hilary wasn't very interested in James Joyce. She pointed out the much-photographed sign that said, 40-foot gentlemen only, and said she remembered her mother telling her about the feminists first swimming in there to claim it back for everyone. "But that can't have been in your mother's time, surely."
"It was probably in my time. I'll be 40 this year," Hilary said gloomily.
"So will I," Marilyn said. A first mark of solidarity between two totally different women. They had a swim, which froze Marilyn's blood to the marrow, and then ate their makeshift picnic. Hilary did most of the talking. "Tell me about Rhea's marriage," Marilyn asked. They talked about Rhea. Hilary told the whole story as she knew it. The sudden announcement, and he was gone overnight. The utter folly of it all. The comeuppance, which was near at hand. Barney McCarthy wasn't a golden boy anymore, and his political pals weren't in power. It was curtains for Mr. Danny Lynch. "Did you ever like him?"
"I was nervous about him. He was too smart for Rhea, too good-looking. I always said it, and it turned out I was right in the end. Gave me no pleasure being right. I'm happily married myself. I'd prefer her to have been." "Are you happily married?" Hilary asked suddenly.
"I don't know," Marilyn said.
"You must know."
"No, I don't."
"And what does your husband think?"
"Oh, he thinks we're happily married. We have nothing to say to each other, but he wants to go on as normal."
"Sex, do you mean?" Hilary asked.
"Yeah. It was good once, but no, it would be empty. I had a hysterectomy 2 years ago, so even if a 40-year-old woman could conceive, which they can't, there's still no chance for me."
"I think you're lucky that he still wants to be with you in that way."
"I can't have children, and so Martin thinks we shouldn't have sex, so we don't."
"I don't believe you,"
Marilyn said.
"It's true."
"But since when?"
"We're married 16 years, about 8 years, I'd say, since he knew we couldn't have children."
"And did you know before?"
"I always knew. I went to a fortune teller, you see, and she told me."
"Did you believe her?"
"Totally. She's been right about everybody."
Hilary tidied up the remains of their food and put it into a paper bag. She was so sure and confident in everything, including the fact that this psychic had told her she wasn't fertile. This was a very strange country.
"Is she a psychic?"
"I don't know. She just knows what's going to happen."
"Is she a medium?
Does she get in touch with the dead?"
"I don't think so," Hilary said. "I didn't want to anyway. I only wanted to know about the living."
"And what else did she tell you?"
"She said I'd be happily married, which is true, and that I'd live in a place with trees, but that hasn't happened yet."
Marilyn paused for a moment to think about a woman who considered herself happily married to a man who thought about nothing except interest rates, and didn't believe in sex without the possibility of procreation.
"Is she still around, this woman?" Marilyn asked.